And haven't talked about, I've sort of touched on the music and here. I love the story that you get to hear about this, the fact that it's like Roy Disney brought this in because of the fact that, you know, his child's reaction to it was they would sort of jump up and down. It was the bouncy, bouncy song. I like that explanation of it. It was really great idea. I can see that being the case. And of course you have the ending. Talking a little bit more about the interstitials. What was I going to say about the interstitials? Can't remember if I've talked about as much as I would like, but this is, you know, it's one of those things where it's like people criticize this movie. They say, oh, you know, the interstitials are not necessarily as good as The Deem's Tale, which is true, but, you know, I mean, you know, and they criticize the movie perhaps a little bit unfairly, you know, the fact that they're not as good, and they probably criticize the film too much because of the interstitials. It's about the animation. It's not about the interstitials. The interstitials are a necessary evil, one might say. You know, they're there for context, they're there to have fun, they're to let you catch a breath, you know, so you don't tire, and so you have time to process what you've seen. So, now, I mean, I believe it was the same review, I can't remember, compared this unfairly to Dance, unfavorably to Dance of the Hours, and I do think unfairly. I mean, no. Is it as artistically intriguing? Is it as artistic as Dance of the Hours? No. I love it because of the fact that you've got this flamingo is just completely, you know, it's very sly animation on the part of the main flamingo, the flamingo you like the most often. I love the way that he looks different from the other flamingos. In both his mannerisms and just the color. There's something playfully sarcastic about this piece that I just really love. My mother's a huge flamingo fan, so I knew the second I saw this she would like it. She did. And I love the look of it. You know, it's sort of watercolor look to it, just really works very well for what it was supposed to be about. Just really enjoyable piece, you know, quick, simple, to the point, doesn't go on too long, doesn't go, you know, but at the same time you feel like it goes on long enough, so. Anyway, yeah, I really do feel like that people probably put way too much in terms of the interstitials and their criticism. I mean, for me, it's the animation that is first and foremost in this. That's the most important part. Penn and Teller. I like the end of this. I mean, yeah, I like Penn and Teller's thing enough in this. James Earl Jones was pretty funny in the next one, in the one before this, too. Yeah, I mean, for me, it's the animation that's first and foremost. I mean, that's the most important part of it for me. You know, how good is the animation? How well does the animation pay tribute to the music? How much reverence is paid to the music? How much artistry goes into animation, and for me, that's the most important thing, you know? And I mean, how entertaining is that? I mean, I find myself endlessly entertained by this film. It's probably, I don't know if it's my favorite Disney movie of all time, but it's one of them, you know, in conjunction with the original Fantasia. And right now, we're seeing The Sorcerer's Apprentice, the iconic piece from Fantasia and part of the iconic Fantasia anthology selection, and thankfully the one that's in both of these. You know, and I remember seeing this, but it was a long, long time ago. I hadn't seen the original Fantasia in a while when I saw Fantasia 2000, so I decided to rent it, and watch it again before I saw the Fantasia 2000, and I liked it. I was impressed. I was duly impressed. Even more impressed when I finally saw this on the big screen. I was amazed at how well they restored it. Admittedly, IMAX does not do this piece justice because of the fact that it's so big. You sort of get, you know, that, and this wasn't designed for IMAX in the first place, that, you know, it doesn't really, this sort of was not exactly treated well by the IMAX screen, but, you know, when you saw it in theaters, if you saw it in the normal multiplex, I mean, you would see very good restoration. And I mean, I'm watching it here, I mean, it looks absolutely fantastic, as does the original Fantasia on DVD. They did a great job restoring this. I mean, it really looks like it sort of belongs as part of this. It's not as slick as some of the other segments, but the quality of animation obviously is there. I can see why this would be main people's favorites. I don't know. I tend to go more towards some of the more serious segments. You know, this is pure fantasy, and it's entertaining as can be. It's one of the most entertaining pieces of animation I've ever seen, but I don't know, for some reason I prefer, you know, some more serious stuff. I mean, if I were younger, I would say, yeah, this would definitely be my favorite, probably. But it is a pleasure, though. I mean, this piece it'll put a smile on your face no matter how old you are when you see it. I love the fact that they use the original recording. The original Sikowski recording. It was an important part, and it was interesting to listen to the contrast and the way that sounded compared to what the rest of the music sounded like. But, you know, and I mean, if you're listening in that sense, I mean, I guess I could see, you know, maybe saying, well, they could probably re-record it with, like, the Chicago Symphony, but you know what? Why bother? The performance was great to begin with. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. And this is far from broke. This is about perfect. I was really interested to see how they were going to do the transition at the end because of the fact that I saw this, like, the day I saw Fantasia 2000, or I saw the original Fantasia, the day before I saw, the day I saw the original Fantasia, or Fantasia 2000 for the first time, and, it's one of those things where I was, you know, at the end of this, you know, if you know the segment, you know, at the end, you see Mickey Mouse go up and congratulate Stokowski. I was wondering how they were going to do that transition, and they handled it pretty well. They really did handle pretty well, I think. I mean, maybe a bit too Disney-like for some taste, but I think it worked out well. One of the things that probably didn't impress people as, I think part of the reason this didn't get the respect of the original Fantasia is because, as a whole, most of the segments are more crowd-pleasing. They're more designed to entertain as opposed to the original, which was more high art, more of an experiment, more of a... more something... It was more of an art film than this is. I mean, with the exception of, you know, perhaps the Sorcerer's Apprentice, it was the original Fantasia almost strikes me as more of an art film than it does Disney. I mean, you just don't think of Disney that way nowadays. And I think, you know, one of the things that really bothered people was maybe this was more geared towards entertainment value and crowd-pleasing entertainment than the original was. And, I mean, basically what I have to say to that is, you know, that's what Disney does nowadays. That's how Disney is nowadays. I mean, it's a different studio than it was 60 years ago, for sure. I mean, they still put, granted, don't get me wrong, back in the good old days, as some people would say, I mean, you know, you had your sort of lightweight entertainments. You had your Dumbo, you had Sleeping Beauty and all that stuff. And around this time, you had Dumbo, Bambi, and Pinocchio, and Snow White. You know, and one would almost certainly say that, well, you know, talk about it's... That's a far cry, you know, that's a very different lineup, more serious-minded artistic lineup than, say, The Lion King and Beauty and the Beast and Little Mermaid, which is very much rooted in modern aesthetics of entertainment in terms of film. And Fantasia 2000, for better or worse, is part of that legacy of The Lion King and Beauty and the Beast. I think it's for the better because it's favorably comparable to those, I think. If you didn't notice that there has been a considerable shift in the way Disney animation, in the way their animated features are now as opposed to back then, not just in terms of the technology or the animation and stuff like that, but in terms of what stories they're telling. I mean, the way they tell their stories is really very different than how they used to tell them. And so, I mean, you know, if the new Fantasia 2000 is a bit more crowd-pleasing, a bit more, I don't want to say commercially driven, because it, you know, you can tell that you can tell the passion and artistry of the piece. As opposed to the original Fantasia, I mean, it's inevitable. I mean, you know, whereas Disney in the 30s and 40s, it was the animation definitely came first, and you had the marketing, which was considerable even for that time, especially for that time, was second. I mean, it's sort of reversed nowadays. I mean, where, you know, people tend to think more in terms of the marketing muscle of Disney than they do the artistry, and they sort of take the animation for granted. And I mean, bottom line is, yes, you know, think about it, Disney has taken some risks in the past several years in terms of some of the stories. Do they work as well as they probably would have back then? No. But I mean, you know, you can't expect the same type of fantasia nowadays. My point is basically, you can't expect the same type of fantasia nowadays than you did in 1940. That's especially true when you see some of the segments in the Fantasia anthology that weren't completed for, you know, to fulfill Walt Disney's dream of this as a perpetual work in progress and sort of an ongoing an ever-evolving art. Here, this is probably the closest we've seen to, like, sort of classic Disney. I mean, except for Sorcerer's Apprentice, this is the closest I think we've seen to sort of, like, classic Disney animation. Of course, naturally, it's the one with Donald Duck with one of the other classic characters, classic Disney characters. And, you know, this type of animation works for the story. And you could really see them doing this as sort of like a short. And this is one where, you know, I mean, I've been talking about how different the studio is, but I mean, this is a story that I could see that studio from the 30s and 40s maybe taking a gamble on. I don't think it would necessarily be this slapstick comic, but, yeah, you wouldn't have Donald Duck in a hammock sipping a drink either. I like the fact that you don't see Noah's face. This one always got a good laugh when I saw it in theater. This one probably got the biggest laugh of any of the episodes, any of the parts in the movie when I saw it in the theaters, and deservingly so. I mean, it is very comic, very slapstick, very enjoyable. You know, I don't know. I mean, I'm basically just trying to figure out. I do like this little gag of having two ducks on there. It's like, well, where's. Wait a minute, he's already got two ducks. I don't know exactly why the dragon and the unicorns are in there. I mean, they sort of talk about it in the technical commentary, but it still doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. But, I don't know. It only lasts for a few seconds, so I really shouldn't worry about it. You know, I have to say, Donald Duck's a pretty good drawer to be able to do those drawings as well as he does, given the resources. I love the idea that they were going for sort of like a Sleepless in Seattle thing with Donald and Daisy. You know, it really works well with the emotions generated by the music. Really does work well. You know, because you can have the moment where, oh no, they don't. They both of them think that the other person's gone, and then later in the next section you have them both sort of the aftermath. I noticed that the feathers sort of holding over to the next scene. I always liked that little touch when I noticed it. I don't like this. And Donald feels sad. It's like, no. And the idea of doing a sort of like Sleepless in Seattle thing, and this really works well too. You know, because of the comic possibilities, because there are two of each one. Sort of just missing each other. And the two ducks again. Classic Donald pose. And of course, Daisy just misses him. I've never heard the original, but I really like this arrangement by PDQ Bach. And it actually, I found it to be actually quite moving. You know, I know I shouldn't be saying that. I mean, I'm way too old to be gay to like cartoons and stuff like that, but bottom line is, you know, when they're done this well, you can forgive yourself for being, you know, moved when cartoon characters who are essentially drawn generate some emotion. And of course you have the great happy ending. Coming up, we have the Stravinsky Firebird, which was licensed to Disney Studios actually around the time of the first Fantasia. And ended up making its way to be the finale in this one, and rightfully so. I think this is my favorite, probably, Fantasia segment of either one, the first or second one. It's just really something that strikes me profoundly moving. No doubt, partly because of the music. I don't listen to a lot of classical music, but I listen to some. And when it moves me, I'll, you know, add it to my collection. And this was something that I really did want to add to my collection and did, and is something that's very uniquely beautiful, this piece is. And the animation is just, there's a delicacy in to the animation here, just a love that really is unlike anything we've seen up until this point. I mean, the closest thing in terms of style from the previous Fantasia 2000 segments I think we've seen to this is the last one, actually, Pomp and Circumstance, but this goes even farther, I think. You know, or some people liken this to Princess Mononoke, which actually had just come out not like a month or two out before this, the Miyazaki film that also deals with the death of the destruction of nature and its rebirth and eventual rebirth at the end of the film, which is a great film in its own right. And I just look at this as sort of another interpretation. Is it necessarily a better interpretation on those themes? Not really. Is Mononoke necessarily a better interpretation? Not really. But I think it's both have their merits, and both are just very haunting, actually. Very haunting, very beautiful and lyrical. This, I almost say more so, because Princess Mononoke is more of a myth. This is just unlike anything seen, at least as far as I know, before. And I hate to say it, I did jump the first time I saw this movie when that happened, because even though I should know that there's something that's going to happen, I've seen enough movies to know that when big sort of when a pause happens in the music, you know something scary is going to happen. And it's like, but it's a great credit to the directors that they made me jump nonetheless. And of course, I hate to say that I didn't know the music before I saw it for Firebird, before I saw this, but I really didn't. And this was the piece that was my favorite of all of the pieces they had done. It's just very uniquely beautiful. And I recommend this to as many people as I could. I just absolutely, when I first saw it, I absolutely loved it. And, you know, I felt like this was something people needed to see, not necessarily because it's not necessarily an important film from a social standpoint, but it was something, I mean, this film was that personal to me. This film really touched me that personally on that level. Then you see the remains of the hill after the Firebird has destroyed it. It's just one of those things where it's just very shocking. Actually, you sort of in silent awe at the destructive power of this Firebird. I mean, I'm too much of a rant as far as what we as human beings do to the environment, but I mean, this is not unlike that. This is natural thing, though, and apparently was inspired by Mount St. Helens, and, you know, when that volcano went off, and paid, you know, and done respectfully, I think, you know, done within the confines of Disney, but at the same time, done with a certain degree of respect for what happened. This is the third moment that I just absolutely love, which is the elk bringing the forest sprite back to life. And I think this has more to do with the music than anything. This music is just profoundly moving. And given the proper animation with which to work its magic on us, or cast its spell. It's something that's just uniquely moving, uniquely powerful. This was something that actually moved me very much because of the fact that at the time, it has nothing to do with this, but my grandfather was sick with cancer, and for some reason, because of going through that, and he eventually passed away in July of this year. For some reason, this really resonated powerfully with me in light of that. I think it's completely because of the music, the way the the way the music sort of gives you a sense of hope, gives you a sense of, you know, things, you know, after darkness there is light, or if you want to look at it that way, you can look at it any number of ways, I'm sure, but you know, I don't know, for some reason that's something I think about. I love the fact that it's tears and water that bring back the forest, and I love the fact that the way it's revealed, it's just very beautiful. Now, there are actually two endings to this. There's an alternate ending, which is actually very similar. Different in some sense, but I don't know. I mean, I can't necessarily say one is better than the other. Both of them work for me, and this one worked immensely for me both anytime I saw it. But, you know, they both work extremely well. And it's a really, you know, I don't know if it's necessarily as good of a difference between sort of good versus evil, sacred and profane, as Night on Bald Mountain and Ave Maria is for the original Fantasia, but something, it gets that balance right, and it makes both of those feelings resonate, and to where this is a very uplifting and inspiring ending, much like the Ave Maria is at the end of the original Fantasia. I don't know if it's necessarily as artistic as that, but you know, I think it works in that level just as well. Anyway, like I said, I mean, I really don't have a whole lot more I want to say. I wish I could go into some of the techniques, but I mean, like I said, rent the DVD, Fantasia 2000, buy the Fantasia anthology if you want to find out more about how they did these segments and how they did the interstitials and stuff like that. I hope I've been entertained to listen to. I hope I've presented some, you know, perspective in terms with which to look at the film in. And, you know, I really do think that this is very much the equal of the original Fantasia, or if not the equal, at least a very good continuation of the Fantasia, the idea of Fantasia, the idea of setting classical music to animation. And I think it's an idea that really does need to be continued to be explored. I really hope they continue bringing out more Fantasias. I hope they don't wait 40 years for the next one. I hope they do, maybe once a decade would be good, or once every 5 to 7 years or something like that. Just something with a certain degree of regularity. Keep the idea that Walt had alive, because it's a great idea. Really is a great idea. And I think both Fantasia and Fantasia 2000 show the potential of that idea. And I really hope they do continue it, and hope they go different ways, not necessarily just do classical music. Maybe delve into maybe some electronica music, or, you know, some jazz and what have you. I mean, not necessarily rock and roll, because we got music videos for that, but maybe some instrumentals. I mean, you know, there are possibilities. There are infinite possibilities, because the repertoire of classical music is so great. I mean, it's just so great, and this is one of those things. I mean, both of these in tandem, I rank as one of the 10 finest films I've ever seen. And, you know, that's not just Fantasia or Fantasia 2000. That's both of them in conjunction, because of the fact that they are one of the same. They are two sides of the same coin, if you want to look at it that way. This is a continuation of that, and I think it's a worthy continuation of that. It's something that, you know, obviously people at Disney have really felt powerfully about, and the ideas have always been there, but they finally decided they could do it, and so they did it. And something that I really enjoy watching. I know there are other people who do as well. And for all of us who like Fantasia and Fantasia 2000, keep doing it, Disney. I mean, keep coming up with stuff, because I'll go see it. You know, keep trying to push the envelope. Keep trying new things. Keep this idea alive. It's a good idea. These aren't just music videos for classical music. These are expressions of, these are personal expressions of artistic ideas. And, you know, I think that's one of the key things that makes this work every bit as well as the original Fantasia does. And, keep experimenting with, keep experimenting with animation, because it is one of the great art forms of the past century. I mean, it's one of the great, it is truly one of the great art forms. It's one of the most exciting art forms, and, can't wait to see what the 21st century brings. So far, it's been pretty good. Anyway, that's it for me. That's all I can think of. This is the Musical Movie Critic saying good night. This is Fantasia 2000. See ya.